and does not mean that the advisor has attained a particular level of skill or ability.
This show furnished by Money Matters with Ken Moran.
On average, Angelinos spend an additional 80 hours a year behind the wheel due to traffic. And while we can't help you recoup that time, we can help you pass the time by covering the stories that impact you in a smart, clever, and sometimes hilarious way. Think of us as The Daily Show. Only hourly. KABC. Los Angeles. Orange County. A stimulus
Trump
station.
Threat. Ford truck recall. I'm Michael Toscano. Is he thinking payback now? President Trump apparently still upset about losing the fight over repealing Obamacare. One of his staffers threatening a primary challenge for a Freedom Caucus member from Michigan who defied the White House. Here's Ryan Nobles.
Dan Scavino, who is in charge of social media here at the White House, tweeting that Donald Trump is bringing back jobs and plants back to Michigan, and Justin Amash is a big liability. Then this is the important part. He says Trump train, defeat him in a primary.
No comment yet from the congressman. Ford is recalling 53,000 brand new 2017 F-250 trucks because they can roll away even when parked and braked. Marlis Majerus checking on that for us.
Ford says drivers should use the parking brake to make sure that parked cars do not move. Dealers will also replace the defective part for free, but Ford doesn't have the replacement parts yet. It will notify owners when they are available.
Baseball. Miami beat Detroit this afternoon. I'm Michael Toscano. The death toll from an avalanche of water near Colombia's border with Ecuador has now reached 154. It's likely to go farther higher with several hundred missing. The avalanche knocking out power in half of the province of Putumayo, Colombia. The president there, Juan Manuel Santos, blaming climate change, saying these rains are increasingly more intense. Well, NCAA tournament ready to carve out its finalists from among the final four, South Carolina, Gonzaga, Oregon, and North Carolina, the last team standing in a March Madness field that started with 68 teams. Jim Rope is still standing for us. He's in Arizona, where the first game is just over an hour away. Jim?
The first game today, number one Gonzaga versus number seven South Carolina. Now, this is the biggest audience ever for both schools, more than 60,000 on hand. The experts are picking the Bulldogs mainly on the strength of 7'1", 300-pound center Shemek Harnowski and the shooting of Jordan Matthews. That doesn't mean the Gamecocks don't have game, however. They have surprised and hacked their way through the entire tournament.
I'm Michael Tosca.
I'm Nick Salone.
Talk Radio 790, KABC News, live and local at 202. I'm Steve Cumming. Torrance refinery managers say they used a modified form of hydrofluoric acid to make it safer at the Torrance oil refinery, but industry critics and local activists have questioned whether it really is. Today's all-day hearing comes on the heels of a federal EPA report that cited repeated flaring, electrical outages, and equipment breakdowns that have resulted in increased pollution and safety concerns. Meanwhile, advocacy groups Food and Water Watch and Save Porter Ranch will hold a community forum to discuss efforts to keep SoCalGas's Aliso Canyon natural gas storage facility closed. The forum will be held 1 hour from now at Temple Avat Shalom in Northridge. Checking sports in the NBA at the half, the Clippers are leading the Lakers 55-50. As you heard, today's NCAA Final Four gets going just after 3 o'clock this afternoon with South Carolina taking on Gonzaga. Then just before 6, the Oregon Ducks will play the North Carolina Tar Heels. We've heard one report from KABC's Jim Roop in Phoenix. Here's another.
There are four Canadians on the Ducks roster, including their two stars, Dylan Brooks and Dylan Ennis.
You know, Canada is really starting to get a lot more, recruiting action.
Head coach Dana Altman says the so-called Canadian pipeline is being tapped by a lot of schools these days. For one, the sheer talent.
You know, I think they're, the one characteristic is they've all been very easy to work with on the floor and off. And all of them really excited about the opportunity.
There have been seven Canadian players to play for the Ducks over the past 6 years. At the Final Four, I'm Jim Roop in Phoenix.
Looking at KABC traffic in Culver City on the 405 southbound at Venice Boulevard, there's a two-car accident in the carpool lane. It's stop and go backed up to Burbank Boulevard. Expect a delay of about an hour. ABC SoCal Weather Watch, sunny this afternoon with highs from around 70 at the beaches to the mid-70s to around 80 inland. Santa Monica has 63 degrees. Santa Ana and downtown both have 72. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
As a 300-foot-tall dino monster, people think all I'm good at is rampaging. But there's more to me than that. Just like Geico. Yeah, they could save you money, but they also have over 75 years of savings and service. So Geico is super good at insurance. And yeah, I like rampaging. but I'm also a huge fan of opera.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
If you have hard water, the limescale not only leaves white spots, it clogs pipes and breaks down appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars in energy and wear. Eliminate limescale and other water issues like brown staining, bad odors, and lead with HydroCare water products available from Wave Home Solutions. Wave's affordable systems don't use salts or chemicals. You'll love the way your water tastes, smells, and looks. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, go to goodclearwater.com. That's goodclearwater.com.
Your one stop for breaking news and adult fun. 790 KABC.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasin. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Kerry Kasin.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening around the world on KABC.com. I am Alan Gervie, and I am the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here with my lovely co-host and beautiful, talented Kerry Kasin to be the managing partners of your life. Kerry is smiling. Nice to see you today.
Good to see you, Alan.
Why are you so happy? It isn't International Happy Day today.
I'm actually excited about our guest today. It's a beautiful day out. I have an event to go to tonight. There's lots of things to be excited about.
What kind of event do you have to go to tonight?
Well, my brother-in-law, Jamil Abulhassan, Dr. Jamil Abulhassan, is the head of it's like a special heart unit at UCLA, and he runs it's the congenital heart disease unit, and he's created different operations and different things. He's this genius doctor.
What is the event, Kerry?
If he's getting
a huge award. You, I need
he's
you to answer
award.
The question.
Oh, he's I have getting to look it up. I don't know the name of the thing. It's at Hollywood and Highland.
Well, congratulations to your brother-in-law.
Thank you.
I hope that he's not getting investigated for anything.
No.
He's clean, huh?
He is.
Because, you know, every day we're hearing more and more about potential investigations of President Trump, Michael Flynn, the Russian ties, and who better to talk to about independent investigations of an administration or of a president than our first guest. And I know you're excited to talk to the Ken Starr, and I have a lot of common things with Ken Starr. He won't know this until we talk about it. But first of all, I want to introduce Ken Starr because he has made the news in so many different ways, mostly positive, sometimes some controversy. He was the former federal judge under President Reagan. He was United States Solicitor General under George H.W. Bush. He argued 36 cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. He's the former law clerk of one of my favorites, Supreme Court Chief Justice Warren Burger from 1975 to 1977. He was a leading candidate for the U.S. Supreme Court, and maybe we can ask him about the Supreme Court nomination process that is currently going on. He's former president and chancellor of Baylor University. He also was the dean of Pepperdine School of Law, and he's come out with a new book, a really wonderful read called Bear Country, The Baylor Story. Ken Starr, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Oh, thank you, Alan. It's good to be with you.
It's great to have you. Now, I've just listed a number of accomplishments, and you're kind of on a little respite, and we're going to talk about that now since you're no longer president of Baylor or chancellor, and you're not even teaching there. But when you look back about all of these things that I mentioned, what makes you most proud as you sit here today?
I think above all, Alan, being a federal judge, when I was clerking for a judge and then the chief justice, I thought this is such a wonderful and noble profession. So I was very honored when President Reagan nominated me and I was confirmed by the Senate. And I would still be there today, but other opportunities came for first for public service. But I just loved the calling of a judge.
You know, Chief Justice Warren Burger said, we need to be able to disagree with one another without being disagreeable. Now, that doesn't seem to be the case in today's political world, does it?
No, it does not. And the Chief Justice felt very strongly about this. And of course, he lived in an acrimonious age, the age of the 60s in particular. He was on the D.C. Circuit. He was then nominated by President Nixon after a very, very difficult and, what shall I say, it was not a very pretty presidential campaign. Lots of riots in the streets and
right.
so forth, the assassination of a president, all that. And yet through all that, he felt very strongly that we need to do our very best, given our inevitable disagreements, to try to respect one another. It was just a heartland Midwestern kind of value that came naturally from him. And I wish we would recapture that sense of just frankly respect for the views of others, even when we disagree.
What was it like on a day-to-day basis working as a clerk for Chief Justice Burger?
He was a great role model for me in that he always kept his eye both on his work and then on what else should I be doing, that is his work at the Supreme Court. And he took very seriously, just by way of example, the need to be a leader in the reform of justice. He was a great reformer. You know, keep what's best, but reform the rest. And he felt very strongly that our prison system very much needed reform, and we needed to work with people in prison and to make sure that they received educational opportunities and so forth. And I use that just as an example. He was very, very inspiring as someone who cared about our country, deep love of country, and yet wanting to make the country better.
You know, it's interesting because before you were a clerk for Chief Justice Warren Burger, you and I have something in common. And I don't often get a chance to do this with any of our guests, but I'm going to do this with you, Ken, and this is not prearranged. I'm just going to sing a little song, and I want to see if you can fill in the rest of the words. I'm going to stop and see if you can fill it in, because not many people share what we do. Here it goes. It's a great day to be a bookman, best day I know. Great day to be a bookman, everywhere I go. Bye-bye, no, never. Bye-bye, doubt and fear. It's a great day to be a bookman, so ring out a cheer. Ken?
I can't finish it, but you're a bookman from southwestern Nashville, Tennessee.
I feel happy. I feel healthy. I feel terrific.
Oh, I didn't know that was the song. See,
yeah.
I graduated from Southwestern bookselling school so long ago, we just would yell, I feel healthy no matter how you felt.
Right.
I feel happy no matter how miserable you are. I feel terrific, even though you wanted to jump off the roof.
Exactly. And now that was part of the song. That was at the end of the song.
Oh,
and then there was another verse. We went along. Now, what was the temperature of the showers that you took in the morning before you went out on the book field?
Cold. Very, very cold.
Absolutely. It was so cold.
You have to wake up and you have to have a good hearty breakfast, and you have to be in the field knocking on the first door or ringing the first doorbell by 8 a.m. sharp.
And then, of course, you would be swinging your sample case for 14 hours, 6 days a week.
And making a lot of money.
Making a lot of money.
Days.
So you,
yeah,
when,
oh, what a great connection.
When I did it, I was working my way through Brown University. I was a student manager for the Southwestern Book Company. And that is another thing we have in common, because I actually recruited people from Brown to come to Nashville for sales school. And you were a master's student at Brown.
Yes, exactly. I was in a PhD program and then decided, no, I don't think so. I'll go to law school. But I loved Brown. And I would have gone back into the field. I only did, I was a book salesman for only 1 year because I had other things that I wanted to do. But congratulations. That means you stuck with it.
I did. And I don't know if you know, but Spencer Hayes passed away this past month. Were you aware of that?
I was aware of it, and truly a great man who really built up Southwestern and also had other interests. I could never, Alan, be as well-dressed as Spencer.
Yes, he always wore a three-piece suit. And here's a quote attributed to him, and I just want to ask you, Ken, how you take this quote, and since you have experienced Southwestern, how it provided for you the impetus of succeeding as you have. Spencer said, the greatest success goes to those who make up their minds to serve and continue serving despite discouragement, disappointment, frustration, and everything else that causes average people to give up.
Yes, it's a great reminder that persistence, just staying with it, keep your hand on the plow. You get down, right, you're knocked down for the eight count, but just get back up again. And I love that kind of sentiment. It really was captured beautifully by Theodore Roosevelt with his tribute to the person in the arena, bloodied but unbowed.
Right. Face marred and blood coming home with blood, sweat, dust, and still being able to, I think that was in 2010 in the Sorbonne when he made that speech, if you recall.
You mean 1910?
1910. What did I say, 2010? 1910 yeah. At the Sorbonne. That's right. So
yeah.
We want to talk.
Very inspiring.
I have a question because you guys have been talking here. This is Kerry Kasem, Ken. And, I watched you, a lot of you when, the whole Bill Clinton thing was happening. And, I wanted to know, I had a couple personal questions because what I do things
sure.
to in fight for justice, dealing with, the elderly and elder law. And there's a lot of people that don't agree with certain things I want to change in the law, and I'll get a lot of that. But you got pummeled by people who loved Bill Clinton. I mean, pummeled. And did you ever succeed in changing some of those people's minds? And did you ever get any apology letters for what you went through?
No, and I never asked for any apology letters. The sacrifice of service, especially on the part of our military, for our men and women in uniform, our first responders and so forth, is so much greater than anything that I had to experience. So I never was called to serve my country in uniform. That was a particularly unpleasant job. It was very unpleasant for the country. But I understood the stakes were very high, and the idea of an investigation into a very, shall I say, unhappy situation was just by its nature terribly unpopular. And I appreciated that. I didn't cry about it. I didn't moan about it. But my message was, and I guess this comes from the old Southwestern book days, just do your job. There's so much that you can't control what other people think, but keep your eye on what it is that you're supposed to accomplish, and then do your dead level best.
There was an article, this was last year, it said, Kenneth Starr, who tried to bury Bill Clinton, now only praises him. What are you praising him for now?
Well, I'm not sure the context of the article, but I've always praised President Clinton for his remarkable skills and his determination. He was the comeback kid, right? He got beaten down in the primaries way back when in 92. He was the comeback kid. He lost the midterm elections in his party lost the elections big time in 1994. For the first time in 40 years, the Republicans controlled the House of Representatives. The Senate flipped as well. And yet he kept coming back. There were predictions that he would face serious primary challenges, as other presidents of his party had before him. So I admired his determination. And he also just had this incredible skill set that was captured beautifully by David Marinus of The Washington Post in his very admiring biography of President Clinton, which is called First in His Class. So I regretted the whole thing for the country, but nonetheless it had to be done, it being the investigation.
You also said that you've regretted that the Monica Lewinsky issues became part of the investigation. At the time, did you have any concerns that maybe the investigation was going too far and perhaps that should have been something separate and apart from Whitewater?
At the time, we did not have the luxury of reflecting deeply on that. And frankly, neither did the Attorney General of the United States. It was now the late Janet Reno's decision that the investigation had to go forward. There were some action-forcing events and depositions scheduled. In an ideal world, though, we would have had a different independent counsel, different track, and we would have just completed the orderly work that we had underway. That would have been ideal, but it was impractical under the circumstances.
So do you think when we fast forward to today that it's still feasible and perhaps in the future to have an independent investigation, for instance, with issues such as President Trump's relationship with Russia or Michael Flynn's relationship with Russia?
Throughout, yeah, the answer is yes. Throughout our history, there have been times going back to the Ulysses S. Grant administration a long time ago, right after the Civil War, when the decision was made, we really do need an independent investigation as opposed to someone who ultimately answers to the president. We see that Attorney General Sessions recused himself because of a personal kind of engagement. And so his stepping aside leaves it now to the acting deputy attorney general, et cetera. But even with that, there are times, and this may be one of those times, I think we need to know more facts, when it's very important to have an outside independent investigation, somewhat not beholden to the president or anyone else senior in authority.
Are you in favor of an offer of immunity to testify to avoid criminal prosecution to get to the bottom of things?
At times, immunity is a very important device. Yes, it's not one that a prosecutor should be eager to grant, but nonetheless, it is it's a tool in the toolbox, and it's appropriate, especially when the role of the prosecutor in a matter of such great public interest is to get to the truth. You want to see justice done, but you also want to get to the truth because it's a matter not just of the enforcement of the criminal laws, as important as that is, but any issue that raises questions of public integrity, then you want to get to the bottom of things as quickly as you possibly can. So it's a very appropriate tool to use.
If you looked in your crystal ball, do you think there will be an investigation of the ties to Russia with this administration?
My crystal ball is just too cloudy, and I'm not punting. I just don't know. I just don't know enough of the facts. If there comes a time when, and that's an if, when in order to, and this is the key, to have public confidence or to restore public confidence, then you need to use that mechanism of outside independent review, then it should be used. It's a very important, historically rooted device.
You know, it's interesting you said you need to see the facts, you need to see the evidence. That's something that has come up over and over again with your responses with what occurred at Baylor and with the sexual assault cases. You wrote a book that's come out last month, Bear Country, The Baylor Story. We want to talk about that, but we need to take a quick break. We're talking to Ken Starr. You're listening to Gervie's Law. We'll be right back.
News, talk, evolve. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Any person who makes or causes to be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie & Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn. 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite.
The standard run-of-the-mill tests and treatments.
Cortisone.
Antihistamine.
Multiple creams.
Antibiotic spray.
Multiple prescriptions.
Steroid injections.
Topical spray.
The sharp antibiotics.
Steroid cream.
No results.
It was neglect. The other owners didn't care enough about him to take care of him and to give him the nutrition he needed.
A nutritional supplement like Dynavite.
To be the healthy, happy dog he is today.
Dinovite .com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
Put some nutrition in your dog.
The vet that I trust recommended Dynavite. The dog I have today, because of Dynavite, has a sparkle in his eye, a lush coat, healthy skin.
When you rescue a dog, you've got to feed them right for life.
Dynavite will make your dog a happy dog.
Dynavite is nutrition.
Dynavite for life.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dinovite.com.
Why won't a plumber just tell me what it costs to unclog my drain over the phone? Is it that complicated?
No, it's not. It makes no sense at all. They obviously have a price.
Whoa, you've got a nice aroma. Who are you?
Mike Diamond, the Smell Good Plumber.
Will you tell me how much to unstop my drain?
$99.
But you haven't seen it.
Don't need to. Doesn't matter if it's a kitchen sink or a mainline sewer stoppage. The Smell Good Plumbers at Mike Diamond will unclog almost any drain for $99.
Almost?
Yeah, there are a few exceptions, but you can read all about them on our website before you call. Just go to thesmellgoodplumber.com.
Wow, you're like up front and everything. I just called a guy named Bubba who wouldn't tell me anything.
No Bubba's here, ma'am. Just professional plumbers who show up on time, smell good, and unclog drains for $99.
Call us, 1-800-446-MIKE.
Contractor license number 399170.
Identity confirmed.
Coming up on the next drive home with Jillian Barbary and John Phillips, will you not be able to take your laptop on the plane anymore because of potential terrorism?
Plus, we'll have the latest in the box office, and of course, we'll see if any more celebrities got hit over the weekend by those burglars.
Oh, God, no.
Live and local right after Dr. Drew and Mike Catherwood right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
We are back. I'm Alan Gervey. I'm here with Carrie Kasem, and we are talking to Time's Man of the Year, which he shared with Bill Clinton in 1998, and a nominee, or at least a leading candidate to be a nominee for U.S. Supreme Court nomination after William Brennan's retirement back in 1990. I'm really jogging Ken Starr's memory here as we talk about the 90s. I wanna talk about your book, Bear Country, The Baylor Story. Now, this seemed like it was a labor of love. The book starts off talking about being the dean of Pepperdine School of Law, which, by the way, I have only great things to say about Pepperdine School of Law, because when I came here, I needed to get some credits because I came from Canada and I went to UCLA, USC, all of the law schools, and Pepperdine opened their arms up and said, Alan, come take courses. We'll give you credit. And I was working at NBC at the time. It was just an amazing situation where they were so open to working with me. And then I went to the Malibu campus and I fell in love. Now you were at the Malibu campus as the dean of the law school. Then all of a sudden Baylor called. What happened?
It was a little bit of heaven on earth. I fell in love with Pepperdine really several decades ago, really through friendships. And I was minding my own business, at George Washington Law School back here on the East Coast, where I happen to be right now. And someone who I knew said, hey, you need to return a phone call. And the phone call turned out to be then the beginning of the process of my becoming president and then president and chancellor of Baylor. Full disclosure, I'm a sixth generation Texan. So when the call came, it was a call to return home. But I absolutely adored Pepperdine, loved every second of it. And we lived on campus overlooking Santa Monica Bay. So it's a great, so glad you said those great things, Alan, about it. It's a very hospitable, warm and welcoming place. But I wanted this book, just very briefly, to be a continuation of the Baylor story, as well as addressing the unhappiness and the tragedy of some of the things that have been reported in terms of Title IX, interpersonal violence, sexual violence, and so forth. It's an enormous issue for all campuses, and I wanted the book to be both a great tribute to Baylor, which I hope it is, because I still love this institution. It is a wonderful place. It's a very popular place, and it's a safe place, but lessons learned, and I wanted to share those lessons as well as the great story of Baylor.
You know, the book reads like a love story with Baylor, and mixed in is, of course, your experience. How, as a person who didn't go to Baylor, you are sixth generation Texan, but how did you do or come to have these feelings about Baylor, an institution that, of course, you know, you were president and chancellor of, but they actually terminated your relationship?
Yes, and then I resigned. Well, actually, they terminated me as president, and I would have remained as chancellor of the university, but I determined I could not do so as a matter of conscience, and so I did leave the university, but I still maintain very close ties. We still raise money for the university and support the university in various ways. So I try to, I'm very imperfect, I have many, many flaws, but I try always to emulate Mr. Lincoln and the second inaugural, malice toward none. And so we march on because I know that this too, this chapter of Baylor's history will pass because the institution will remain just as we go through rough patches in the country's history. The country is strong. The country is vibrant. The country is good. And so too is this institution called Baylor.
You know, it's interesting. This week, there was a video that went viral of Nigerian high school student Patrick Ariam, who got into Baylor. And I don't know if you saw it or not, but he was screaming, I got into Baylor, I got into Baylor. He only applied to one school. That was it. He wasn't going to go to college if he didn't get in. No one in his family has ever gone to college. And he got into Baylor and went crazy. So when you talk about the love for Baylor, it's not only found in the book Bear Country, the Baylor story. There's a lot of people in Texas and throughout the country who revere the school, and obviously you do in the book. But the book does, of course, touch on the blemishes of Baylor and the reason for your separation, so to speak. When we talk about the sexual assault cases that have been brought against Baylor, and again, for those of you who aren't familiar, a lot of them had to do with the football team, and football's a big business in schools like Baylor. Baylor being a Christian university, is there an inherent conflict between what went on at Baylor and what people have been saying about the administration that should have maybe known about and taken more action?
Well, I do have a different perspective on that, and I know that is the critique, and reasonable minds can differ. And my perspective, which I lay out in the book and one of the chapters, as you say, it's a love story to and about Baylor. But in dealing with this very, very tragic subject, I lay out the facts that this is what we as an administration were doing when I was privileged to serve in terms of assuring student safety. And there was a lot that we, in fact, did. And I think that side of the story, if I may say so, just did not get articulated. And I think one of the reasons is that there was a determination made by the Board of Regents that there would not be a written report of the findings of the outside independent law firm that did the investigation. And so I think there's just a lot of remaining questions. It's not a criticism. It's just a point. So I thought it was all the more important for me to lay out what the administration had done in response to.
I was going to ask you, do you have any regrets? Because you bring up the independent law firm Pepper Hamilton. You actually hired them as president of the university. Do you have any regrets? And did you have any say on who the attorneys were who would be working on the investigation? Because they're two women, Maristo Smith and Leslie Gomez. Do you have any problem with how that all took place?
Well, let me back up. I recommended their hiring, but they were actually hired, and this goes back to our earlier conversation. Their function was to do an independent investigation as an outside law firm. And so I did not hire them, but I recommended their hiring, but they reported only to the Board of Regents. And we, you know, every lawyer would do things in different ways, and I do have, as I say, a different perspective. The conclusion that the Pepper Hamilton lawyers, who you identified, came to is that there was a fundamental failure on the part of the university, and I respectfully disagree with that. I don't think there was a fundamental failure. There were, in fact, issues. But the other thing I need to say, and we as lawyers, but for the audience, allegations are allegations. It's very important to distinguish between charges that are made, including in a court filing, and then the conclusions that courts come to once all the facts are in and the juries come to.
Right.
And that is just let's get all the facts and assess the facts. So I was, from the very outset, urging, even though the investigation from the Pepper Hamilton law firm was independent, I was urging total transparency consistent with federal law and basic decency, you know, to reveal names in embarrassing situations. And in certain instances, it would be a violation of federal privacy laws, and rightly so, for it to be done. So you should not do certain things. But on the other hand, as you may recall, Occidental College went through a very tough situation some few years ago.
Right.
And the Pepper Hamilton report, which I read in the Occidental College case, was the kind of model that I think would have been helpful in terms of answering a lot of questions, because frankly, a lot of Baylor people, including in Nigeria, I assume, say, I don't think I have all the facts or all the relevant facts, and it would be helpful if we did, but we still don't.
You know, it's interesting because I think there were 13 pages released and there was a call to have all of the information, the evidence, like you say, as an attorney, you want to base any determinations on all of the evidence. But there's a little bit of an underpinning in your book suggesting that maybe the university shouldn't have the responsibility, or maybe the coach, Briles, of the football team, administrators, the Title IX officials. Maybe things go on in schools nowadays, and maybe back then as well, that you have no control over and you shouldn't be held responsible. Is that something that you feel strongly about, that maybe you were railroaded a little bit in this situation?
I wouldn't use a pejorative term, but I do think that there should be a reexamination of the approach of the federal government on Title IX, which assures and seeks to assure a gender equity between the sexes. And I love Title IX. When it was passed in 1972 and then thereafter, until the Obama administration, Title IX operated very efficaciously to make sure in particular that women and student athletes, but in all programs, but it became most visible in college athletics, had essentially equal opportunity, not
right,
to play football. But for example, Baylor has a wonderful equestrian team. It's a women's team. It has an absolutely fantastic tumbling and acrobatics team. Those are all women. We would perhaps not have that if it were not for Title IX.
But I was going to say you're failing to mention, for instance, the 1992 case at Brown University, or both of our alma maters.
Yes.
That the case that went to the court pitted men versus women. Don't we have a problem with that when you look at Title IX? In theory, it's a wonderful objective, but in practice, isn't it pitting men versus women, essentially?
Well, the way it's been interpreted, as of April 4, 2011, we do have a problem. And I think universities are going to continue struggling with this interpretation of, and it came a bit out of the blue, that Title IX was now focused on incidents, including off campus, that involved, in the term of art, as interpersonal violence, but sexual violence, some form of violence, typically, of course, men against women. And what I believe, well, it may have been a noble experiment, given my 4 years of struggling with the issue of how do we adjudicate cases, charges of something that happened off campus fairly and protecting the rights of all persons. Obviously, the person who has charged something that may be a very serious offense and may be a crime, that person has to have his, but typically her, rights attended to. We also have to protect the rights of the individual who's been challenged and who has been charged. And I fear that colleges and universities just have not been able to do that job. We're very ill-equipped to be an adjudicatory body, especially over things that happen off campus, at off-campus parties over which the university had no, not only responsibility, no sponsorship, no connection whatsoever.
Did people like Patty Crawford and Gabrielle Lyons, Title IX officials that you actually implemented at Baylor, did they let you down, or did they were they not competent to do what they were supposed to do, or was it the system?
Well, I think, again, I'm not going to criticize any person. I'm very fond of Patty. I did not have a close connection, Patty Crawford. I did not have a close connection with Gabrielle. Patty made some very, shall I say, serious charges back in the fall. And I would have loved to have heard all that. But I will just tell you this. This is one of the things that the university, and I'm talking about Baylor University, has said in a recent court filing. You cannot, I'm paraphrasing, you cannot deal with what you do not know. And what you don't have any reason to know. So you've got to have a seamless and open and transparent system so that issues are brought to you. I maintained an open door. I met with Patty Crawford. I never heard from Patty Crawford or from anyone else that somehow there is this fundamental failure.
And especially having to do with the football team or the athletes. I think that was the accusation, where there was preferential treatment for some of the accused regarding sexual assault through the Title IX investigations.
Yeah, well, I don't quite agree that there was even that. But nonetheless, part of the reason, Alan, that I'm struggling is that we just, again, are behind a veil of ignorance, a thick curtain of ignorance, and it would have been useful and still would be useful if we had, shall I say, as much transparency as possible consistent with federal law.
We have to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about religious freedom and liberty, something that you have been outspoken about, and I know Carrie wants to chime in here. We're talking to Ken Starr. I'm Alan Gervey. I'm here with Carrie Kasem. We'll be right back.
We are all kings.
I'm the kings, baby.
7979 KABC.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy, for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-461-2525. That's 1-800-461-2525. 1-800-461-2525. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price can vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Welcome to GEICO's Motorcycle Meanderings.
Oh man, this is great. I sure saved a lot of money by switching to GEICO. Scored some big savings, and now I can use their mobile app 24/7 for all sorts of stuff, Life just makes sense now. You know what doesn't make sense? If a car is called a horseless carriage, why isn't a motorcycle called a horseless horse? Maybe it would just be adding insult to injury for the out-of-work horses.
Geico Motorcycle. Savings that make sense.
It's Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot, where right now, 5 bags of EarthGrow or Vigoro colored mulch are just $10. It helps retain ground moisture and protects your plants, keeping its rich color for up to 12 months in shades of red, brown, or black that'll really set off your garden and your spring. Get Spring Black Friday prices on EarthGrow or Vigoro mulch, 5 bags for just $10. The Home Depot. More saving. More do it. Valid through April 5th. Limit 60 bags per customer. Color selection varies by store.
Get protection for covered repairs with a vehicle service contract from Toco Warranty. Unlike other companies, with Toco, there's no down payment, and the monthly payments are really affordable. Keep your hard-earned cash and call Toco Warranty right now at 800-261-7500 to save big money on covered auto repairs. Prices vary by vehicle, but for about the cost of a tank of gas per month, a Toco plan has your back on expensive covered car repairs. Monthly payments are very affordable. Get your free quote now. Call Toco at 800-261-7500. That's 800-261-7500.
Like the taste of fresh apples? Looking for something a little different? Try an Angry Orchard hard cider. We use traditional cider apples from a 100-year-old orchard. It takes 2 apples to make each bottle of Angry Orchard. So at the end of the day, relax and raise a glass to something a little unexpected. Angry Orchard. Crisp, refreshing, and not too sweet. And now, in cans. Angry Orchard Hot Cider. Branch out.
Angry Orchard Cider Company. While the New York drinkers...
Wake up! Wake up!
With Doug McIntyre in the morning.
I have to talk about how this one over here, Leanne Tweeden, is getting me in trouble with Jesus.
What am I doing?
You are bringing in every day a tub of glutinous, sugary, delectable joy. It's cookies one day, it's brownies the next, and today it's what?
Peanut butter fudge.
Okay, now here's the thing. It's Lent, and I gave up peanut butter for Lent.
Oh, no.
So I'm in trouble with Jesus now. Thank you. I hope you're happy.
Nobody said you had to eat them.
The devil did.
McIntyre in the morning. Now with Leanne Tweeden News. 5 to 10 on KABC.
You've heard of Murphy's Law, but have you heard of Gervie's Law? Anything that can go wrong can be made right. Now, here are your hosts, Carrie Kasem and Alan Gervie.
Yes, we're back. We're talking to Ken Starr, former federal judge, former United States Solicitor General. Just came out with the book, Bear Country, The Baylor Story. A great read. Can be found on Amazon and any other place where you get books. I don't know how you do it these days, but most people just use the internet. At least, Carrie, do you ever go to a bookstore anymore?
I actually do.
Oh, well, that's you.
I do. I love books. I love books. I love the smell of books. Is that weird?
Ken's laughing. I like the smell of a computer myself. But
I love books.
But it
Everybody, you know, I fly so much. I fly once or twice a week. I'm on airplanes. And everybody uses their, you know, even their phones or their tablets. I have to have a book. I tried the tablet thing. I can't do it. I can't. I wish I could.
Ken, what about you? Are you a book fan or no?
Once a book man, always a book man.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
True to Southwestern. I love it, Southwestern. Once a book man, always a book man. But I got to tell you, I read your book, Bear Country, The Baylor Story, on the computer. I really wish I had it in my hands because sometimes you just can spend a little more time on a page before you flip it. There is something about being a book man, isn't there?
Yeah, and I like having a newspaper. So it's the print version. Of course, I do read. We all do on our computers or tablets. Or even I read 92 pages of a brief, a final version on my iPhone.
Oh, no.
It's just, yeah, that was not pleasant.
That I do not like doing it. All my legal work, I can't do it on the iPhone. Carrie, this is a topic
I've been dying
that
to
really
ask this question. Yes.
Interests you.
Yes, you know, the news is out, and I maybe you can confirm it or not, but you're being considered by President Donald Trump to become, and this is a big one, the ambassador at large in the State Department's Office of International Religious Freedom.
It's a mouthful.
It's a rumor.
Yes.
I am in Washington, D.C., but I have not been called by the president. But in any event, Foreign Policy Magazine did carry a report about a month ago, a little over a month ago, that I was under serious consideration. And I've been very transparent. I love the issues of religious liberty. I've been involved in questions of international religious liberty for really for several decades, really since the fall of the Iron Curtain. An organization I've been involved in, I'll put in a plug for it, called Advocates International, seeks to assure liberty and dignity for all persons of all beliefs and no belief, people of conscience, whatever their belief system is or no belief system, that individual conscience needs to be protected. So we shall see. But Foreign Policy Magazine reported that I am under serious consideration, and that's an honor in and of itself. But whatever happens, I will care and continue to work on behalf of religious liberty issues literally around the world.
And I think that's so important. I think that's why what makes our country so great is that we have that. You know, I lived in Asia. I lived in Southeast Asia. I went to China, and you can't even, I mean, it's illegal to practice religion.
But that's taking the easy way out. This issue isn't as straightforward as you talk about right now. In your book, you talk about a debate you've had or have with Alan Dershowitz. And Alan Dershowitz has been on our show many times about the Hobby Lobby case, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993. Tell us what that involved, because when you talk to Alan Dershowitz, he's not going to have the same view necessarily as you, even though it sounds good to say we're all in favor of religious freedom.
Well, that's right. I agree with that. In fact, I've discussed Hobby Lobby with Alan. And Alan, I will say, was very sympathetic and empathetic with the owners of Hobby Lobby. And so let's get a few facts before us. Hobby Lobby is privately owned, five family members, and it's actually a foundation. The family members all live very modestly. And so the profits from this company, with over 500 stores around the country, really go to, you know, support the family. But they, as I say, live very modest lifestyles, and they just devote the lion's share of the profits to good works, including their efforts around the world, including on behalf of religious liberty. So in any event, these five family members all felt very strongly that while providing health care benefits was very important to the employees, that there were four forms of preventive reproductive services that they were conscientiously opposed to. And so the question in the case was, could, and it's a for-profit corporation, the owners of a corporation decline on grounds of conscience to provide the full panoply of services to employees? So I agree. I think it's a hard question. I don't think it's an easy question.
And also, I think maybe something you left out there, we're talking about the Affordable Care Act, so we're talking about a government provision. You know, when you separate the private, and I think you present that very well, but, you know, there has to be some play here with talking about a government program.
Exactly. And I, thus far, we're in complete agreement. And the structure that we have, you need a standard, a yardstick, and the structure and standard that we have by which to measure these competing interests is an act of Congress, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993, virtually unanimously passed by the Congress and signed into law by Bill Clinton. I love that law, and that law sets forth the method by which we measure these kinds of competing interests. And I believe the Supreme Court of the United States got it right in saying that the government has alternative ways to achieve its goal, as opposed to overriding, in this instance, the very sincere, no one doubted the sincerity, religious belief, the beliefs of conscience of these five individuals. And I love the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Now, we can disagree on its application.
Right.
But to me, that's an indication of how much of a consensus we have in this country. I hope we continue to have it in terms of, well, this is the way we're going to look at it. When you look at the law, the development of the law of religious liberty in the United States, our hats go off to great icons like Justice William Brennan, who you mentioned early in the show, the Chief Justice of the United States, for whom I was privileged to clerk, Wisconsin versus Yoder, creating an exemption from the generally applicable laws, namely you've got to send your kids to school until they reach the age of 16, but creating judicially an exemption based on conscience for the Amish community in Wisconsin. And I think those are important principles for living our life together.
You know, it's interesting.
As a free people.
You say that, and you know, a lot of what you say Alan Dershowitz would agree with. In fact, he gave you some of the highest praise, even though he doesn't agree with everything that you've said, or you may be considered to be on opposite sides in certain issues, but you shared a case with him, and he said you were amazing in the Jeffrey Epstein case in creating a resolution that ultimately a lot of people felt that for Jeffrey Epstein was an easy sentence. And Jeffrey Epstein, of course, was accused of pedophilia or sexual assault with minors. And you were actually on the defense team with Alan Dershowitz and Roy Black and some others.
Yes, and it was an honor to work with Alan. And obviously, it was a very sensitive case. Alan is giving me much too much credit. Alan is truly a genius. I'm not. But we do share a lot of very similar values, and that was a great experience working on that matter for Jeffrey. And it's something that I will always remember very fondly. But again, I think Alan is giving me much too much credit. But we agree on a lot.
Do you think in that case that Alexander Acosta, who's now up for Secretary of Labor, Trump's nominee, was too easy? And I know what you're going to say, but you know, a lot of people say, why did Alexander Acosta give in so easily to an 18-month sentence to Jeffrey Epstein?
No, I again have a different perspective on that because to my mind, this was an issue that really was to be handled by the state and local prosecutors. Everything that was unfolding, all of the episodes were, and there was no coercion, there was no violence, no allegation of coercion, no allegation of violence, but all of the episodes occurred within one county limits. And so I do have fairly strongly held views with respect to the exercise of federal authority that there should be great running room for states and localities to make their decisions, make their judgments as to how best to maintain the morality and the criminal laws in the community. And I felt that the federal government should, in fact, defer to the considered judgment of the states. That was my basic position. But the federal government continued and was insistent on moving forward with the prosecution. But the point is, I love Alan Dershowitz.
Before we close, I just want to know, what's next for you? What do you see in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, I'm continuing to work on religious liberty, and I was just in Europe at a gathering of lawyers from 17 different countries, and I hope to be able to continue to do that. And I'll just say, I am thoroughly enjoying volunteering in a local high school in Waco, where we're privileged to live, and at a community college, and to continue to mentor Baylor students. And happily, our 6 grandchildren all live in Texas. Mm-hmm. So it's a very sweet time of life, as I describe it. I'm flourishing in freedom. I miss Baylor, but I'm still a very loyal and supportive Baylor Bear.
Somehow, I don't think we've heard the last of Ken Starr. The book is Bear Country, The Baylor Story. And I know you're enjoying your respite, so to speak, and helping a lot of kids in moot court and some of the other worthwhile endeavors. Ken Starr, I want to thank you for being on Gervie's Law. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It was a great privilege and honor. And Congratulations to your brother-in-law, Carrie.
Oh, thank you. I will actually tell him you said that.
You know, that's just that is just like a lawyer to bring everything full circle. Ken, as Alan Dershowitz said, is an amazing advocate, and he's able to bring everything from the beginning of the show right to the end and put it together with a nice little bow on it.
That's hilarious.
Well, you're too kind. I wish I were there. We loved Southern California, so take good
care
of
Los Angeles. When you're next here, when you're the ambassador for religious liberty for the government, we're expecting you to be in studio with us.
Well, remember, always feel happy, healthy, and terrific.
There we go. I feel happy, healthy, and terrific. Thanks.
Okay.
And I want to thank everyone for listening to Gervie's Law today, Carrie.
Yes, absolutely.
I feel happy, healthy, and terrific.
Have you ever been sung to before, Ken? Ever?
I think.